with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. It's October 18th, 2025. We welcome you folks out there. We thank you for being here. We'll be right back right after this song.
He's walking on a narrow path and holding his head high. He's talking of an answer that will make a grown man cry. He's hoping for a better day and doing all he can. He's living and he's praying for a place to make his stand. An American is someone who knows just what he's got.
And we're back, and you're listening to Coffee. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Well, I'm glad you could make it. Tim, you want to start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
Sure. Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, for another opportunity to serve you, Lord, for another opportunity to shine forth to the world benefits and the values of your kingdom. And Lord, we just pray that you would make our paths straight, that you would open ears this morning, that you would make all our technical difficulties resolve themselves, Lord, that we might just get a chance to help, Lord. We thank you for that opportunity. I pray now that you'd bless and watch over your people in these trying times, because there's a lot of turbulence in the world out there, Lord. Just keep us safe in the shelter of your hand. Build a hedge around us all, Lord, that we might be safe. The world might know who our God is. We might just come through this storm with all the blessings and benefits of our salvation. I pray now for all these things. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Amen. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
And good morning, Will. Well, I thought we had him on there. It looked like we did.
Yeah.
Oh, are you there?
I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
There we go. See, what happens is when you press mute when you're sneezing and blowing your nose, and then you don't unmute yourself, you can't say good morning. So good morning.
I understand.
We've all been.
Well, I guess.
It's a happening time to be alive.
It is.
Yes.
It really is. Well, one of the things, I guess we'll start off with world news. Ukraine plotting terrorist attack is, I guess, kind of on the top of the radar. You know, it's interesting, though, as I was reading this article, I don't know. It just seems it seems weird. They start off with talking about how they're openly going to use this long range missile that they acquired from the United States. But then they put it in the news. I mean, does that seem kind of weird? Or, you know, if you're going to go use a long range missile and go bomb another country, do you put it in the news before you do it?
That's a very good question.
I mean, it just
I may get some flack. If some people listening may think less of me, but I learned early on that one of the best tactics in a fist fight is the sucker punch, and they never see it coming, right?
Right.
But if you make it international news, they see it coming. And I agree with you, Jason. We're talking about it, so there's an audience, and you can't have political theater without an audience. And maybe some of this is just political theater.
And that's what I was going to say, too. It's a perceived threat issue. I mean, I actually like the fact that they said, oh, well, they're going to use U.S. supply, you know, Tomahawks. Well, we haven't given them to them yet. I mean, Trump's saying, well, this war, we're only going to approve the deliveries of this quote if this war is not going to get settled. So, you know, we're kind of, I think this is, what do you want to call it? Armstrong.
You think it's a negotiating tactic?
That's what I think it is, to a large degree.
Yeah.
So. I mean, when you look at the technicalities of Tomahawks, number one is they operate on a secured system, and you don't just turn the system loose to arm those two. Some terrorists like the Ukraine over there, I mean, at least thinking minds would. So that means that we would have to program and set them up for them, which leaves fingerprints on these things that were really not that we're not liking, which is kind of what Putin's saying. He's like, well, that's going to be perceived as a direct attack against us by the United States. And so I think it's just a push and pull, politically speaking, myself. It could develop into something else. Who knows? The world would move, but.
You hit on something key, Tim, and that's, you know, it's not just Tomahawk missiles. U.S. Tomahawk missiles mean U.S. missile technicians, which means U.S. soldiers. You know, it's not going to be the Ukrainians operating these things. It's not like handing somebody a Remington 870 and 30 seconds later you can make them fairly proficient in it. I think that's why the hesitancy is there with Trump. And I do believe, Jason, I'm with them. I believe this is more of a negotiating tactic, and that's why it's out there, is I think the U.S. is probably pushing on Russia pretty hard to get this thing settled.
It's interesting. Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff. I don't know. I mean, some of the times when you look at it, you're reading these articles and on what's going on over there in Russia and Ukraine, it just the the word wag the dog keeps popping in my head, and it's like, how much of this stuff is even real? I really don't know. I guess.
Well, it's definitely
what I do. Go ahead, Tim.
It's definitely a rotating perception point. You know, I mean, they can use that as, well, we don't want them looking over there today, so let's make some noise over here. You know, I mean, it's like there's some of that going on. And I mean, does anybody really think that if Russia wanted to, I mean, Ukraine is a micro dot on the face of Russia as far as militarily and personnel and everything else. Does anybody really think that they couldn't just walk in there and seize the capital in a matter of no time? And I realize, you know, people will immediately talk about NATO and about this and that. But, I mean, I think, again, we were just talking about advertising stuff on the news, like Jason said. But if you did a blitz attack or something like that, they'd have that in. I mean, it would be literally hours. You know what I'm saying? So, there's something else at play here that's much deeper, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think
agreed.
So too. I agree.
This is kind of a bump in the road, but kind of the same thing as far as wag the dog and all that, Jason. But Estonia, which is, you know, a small country in that region right there with Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus and all of that. It made some news that some folks snapped some photographs of what they're claiming to be masked Russian soldiers that were on the roadways in Estonia. And you know, I've looked at these pictures and thought, I mean, that could be a deer camp. I mean, it's just some guys in some fatigue standing on the road. You can't tell what these guys are or not. But the key is they're claiming, you know, the people who write these stories and that sort of thing, is this is the same sort of tactics that Russia used in 2014, going back on the Ukrainian border. And the whole perception there, wag the dog, right? What you're talking about is, you know, are we going to bite our fingernails and say, oh goodness, is Estonia going to be the next, you know, country that Russia is going to claim territory in? And, first off, I don't care, if Russia claims Estonia, as, you know, their land or whatever. And really looking at it historically, it probably is Russian land, but that's neither here nor there. But I think it's more of that wag the dog stuff, Jason, that you're talking about of, you know, they want us to worry about what is happening in that European region amongst these people that are all cousins anyways, right? I mean, they're all Russian people historically anyways. So having said all of that, if we're worrying about that, we're not really worrying about what's happening here at home, are we?
Right.
Yeah, and right. That to me is, I think, what a lot of this is.
And it's, I think that area down there is called something like the Fatty Boot or something like that, but it's still Russia's brand. I mean, it's still their territory.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and I love the fact that they're like, well, we closed the road that runs across it. There's a road that runs across there that goes from one side of Estonia through that little peninsula or triangle and then runs out the other side back into Estonia. So, and they closed the road on both sides of it where it runs into Russia. And of course that kind of ramped things up. So it's like, yeah, you know, is it, which came first, the chicken or the egg type thing? And it's
right.
No ground. So, again, more, oh my gosh, there's camouflaged and masked men. We have those all over Portland.
Yep.
So, it's like, what is going on? And why is it? Why? Yeah. So. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting. I don't know. I think that And I think that's really how it did start back in 2014. I remember hearing, you know, stories about, just all of a sudden troops on the border and setting up checkpoints and different things like that. I mean, it's very possible that something else happens, but I don't know, something just to be aware of.
It is. When I'm saying the wag the dog thing with like what you were saying, Jason, I'm not saying that it's not real. I mean, there very well may be folks there. But the question is to what end, you know, why, to what end?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what are they playing at? Or who's playing at what? Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So, and what's going on over in Venezuela?
Oh, boy. a lot.
Yeah, I seen it pop up a couple of times, and it's like, huh? Venezuela, we don't hear a whole lot about what's going on in Venezuela, usually.
No.
We didn't.
Yeah.
We're hearing a lot about it now. You know, Tim said something a second ago of, you know, why would you telegraph something, right? You're putting it out there like these Tomahawk missiles or whatever. And I've seen probably three or four different news stories. And the headline is something like President Trump has authorized covert ops to target the president of Venezuela. So that was obviously put out there, leaked on purpose, whatever, that the CIA is now looking to overthrow Maduro in Venezuela. I mean, what do y'all make of that? Why would you let that come out? Why would you put that out?
Well, you wouldn't. unless you wanted it, unless you wanted to make the president of Venezuela nervous.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
That's what I was looking at.
It's like, did this just get leaked? Is this something that, but it's like, if you really didn't want this to get out, if you're doing a covert operation on a president of a country, it just doesn't seem likely that that's something that you let get leaked out.
Yeah. Unless they're trying to put like extreme pressure on the, I can never say those names, but, the cartel that, you know, over there, or basically, and I don't think a lot of times people understand how much power, how much money that these cartels have. I mean, and I'm not trying to give more credit than they do, but I mean, basically, the cartel over there has more budget than Venezuela has. They have more manpower than Venezuela has. They have more international reach than they do. And so we would assume, given those things, that Maduro is nothing more or less than a mouthpiece for the cartels, whether by, you know, choice or you know, being hijacked as far as under duress. But I think that maybe it's just a way of showing the cartels that, hey, you know, you're not running the show over here. Again, I don't know. I have questions about a lot of those sort of things, kind of like we talked about before. And one of my questions is, if it's Venezuela, why is it? Why are we over there doing anything? I mean, I get the fact that we're not going to let the boats come in here. I get the fact we don't want the drugs in here. So, I mean, where does the line go that says this is as far that way as we can go? So,
you pose a good question, Tim, and, you know, the righteousness of defense. And what we're talking about is preemptive action. And is it righteous? You know, the whole Bush doctrine, right? We're going to hit them before they hit us. And I get that. And I guess my question here is, why not robustly protect the borders of the United States? You know, and I'm personally a guy that the way I read the Constitution and interpret the Constitution when it comes to a standing military is the Constitution provided at the time that it was written, our enemies would have come probably from the Atlantic Ocean. And the Constitution provided for a standing Navy to repel invasion and to protect the ports and that sort of thing. Well, I think, you know, that to me tells me that the Founding Fathers were worried about a foreign invasion, so they were willing to have a standing military to prevent that. Well, now we have an invasion at the southern border, you know, which is also this dope and the weapons and that sort of thing that are coming north. I'm personally for if we are going to prevent the fentanyl, if we're going to prevent the dope, if we're talking about the cartels and their influence, shouldn't we be? And I guess a manner of speaking, we are. But I don't know. I guess what I'm asking, what the question I'm asking is, should we be perpetuating a war on another continent? Or should we just be killing the bastards when they cross our borders? Is one more righteous than the other? I don't know. I'm throwing that out for discussion.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of way that I think of it. I think of, okay, they've already, how many boats did they sink? 27? Or they killed 27 people, and how many boats been, you know, acquired or shot at? I mean, there's been several of them, but that's what I'd say. It's like, I mean, to me, it'd make more sense just to blow the boats out of the water when they're coming across. I think it'd be a lot more cost effective. And I don't think that it'd take blowing up that many boats before those guys would maybe get a clue that maybe we don't want to go over there. Let's find someplace else to sell our drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely. And I don't have all the right answers. It's like, it is a question I'm thinking realistically. I mean, how far, when does it become an offensive, defensive? You know what I'm trying to say? It's like at a certain point, I suppose it's like, okay, let's clean this mess up because it won't stop. But and maybe we're at that point. But it is definitely, it's very easy. And I mean, that's some of the things, if you read the Federalist Papers and some of the early papers from the forefathers, it's one of those things where it says not to be wrapped up in all these foreign affairs because it leads to troops being deployed, massive conflicts in different lands and everything else. So there's a point there where we want to say where we need to internalize our defense, and it needs to be robust and it needs to be final. You know, it's like, no. And I don't have any problem with transporting these illegals out of the country, without. I mean, I actually just kind of shake my head when they talk about, you know, well, they have a right to hearings. They have a right to this. No, they haven't got any rights. They're not citizens. They don't have rights.
That's right.
I mean, they have a right for determination on whether they're a citizen or an illegal alien. If they're determined to be an illegal alien, then all their rights stop there. It's like, goodbye. So we hit that point there where that's the only way you can handle it. But as far as foreign countries go and going in and doing that, isn't that what leads to endless wars like in Afghanistan? I mean, if I recollect, a lot of that was in regards to what drug production and everything else too originally. Wasn't that kind of the original a lot of drugs come out of that area. You know? And then pretty soon it's like, we got all this resistance. We got
all these
troops.
Maybe it's the same old thing, because you could go back to Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and look at the heroin trade, and that was the same sort of thing then, right?
Yeah, it hasn't changed. It's same playbook. I have, and I don't want the drugs in here. That's not what I'm saying.
Sure.
It's not about that.
I'm looking at the Venezuela thing, and I have no love for Venezuelans. I don't. I mean, I'm not in any way. This is no defense of them. I just look at it kind of what you were talking about, as Tim, as a sovereign nation, to me, there's a line, and there's a line between righteous defense and acts of war. And it looks like an act of war when we're not doing it at our border. You know, I guess that's what I'm saying is if these folks were, like Jason was saying, if the boats are coming into our waters or our ports, blow them to kingdom come. And I'm okay with that. I have no issue with that. But I don't know. It's a good flexing of U.S. muscle. I know that it's kind of like the tomahawks in Ukraine or maybe these Russian troops on the highways of Estonia. It kind of feels wag the dog to me too with this.
Part of it just doesn't make sense. And then I wonder what else is going on behind the scenes in Venezuela that we don't, because, you know, is it really the drug trade, or is it something else that we're after? Is there oil there, or is there natural resources, or is there some of this rare earth minerals that we haven't heard about? That's what keeps going through my head is I can't help but think that there's something else, and there's another reason that we would be there and have, you know, boots in Venezuela.
What I read is that Venezuela is sitting on top of the largest sweet crude deposit in the world.
Right. Exactly. As far as and that's what I keep thinking is oil.
Yeah. So, and they're in sole control of it, right? I mean, them and their friends. And, I don't know, what was the, was it Citgo that was affiliated with Venezuela? Was that the big petroleum company? Okay. Yeah. Are we buying Venezuelan oil in the United States nowadays?
I do not know.
I don't know either. There was a time that we had an embargo on Venezuelan crude, and I don't know if we're doing anything with it or not. I don't know. I think what's the root of all evil, guys? The love of money.
Yep.
And I mean, that's, I think this is just evil that we're talking about is, I think that's why we were talking about the usual playbook and the usual suspects. I think that's why they're so willing to sacrifice human beings, no matter what ethnicity or color or stripe that they are. You know, it's for money. It's the greed. And, I guess when we really boil it down, that's probably what we're talking about here, whether it's the dope trade or the oil trade, the money goes all back to the same usual suspects. It's not coming to me. I know that.
Yeah, me neither.
I guess what our info is always, is to watch out for the distortion of any action, you know what I mean? It's like, well, how badly is it going to get distorted or run off track or, you know, those sort of things. I mean, those are the questions that we're asking. And that's the thing that we're trying to articulate is the fact that, have to be careful with these things because occasionally, it would seem in this world, most of the time it gets derailed and, used by someone else. So, I agree. There's probably an underlying reason there besides just wanting to get rid of the drug trade. So that's probably a surface logic thing. Go ahead.
I don't know. Changing the subject a little bit, but I was talking with somebody the other day and they were talking about going to Mexico on vacation. And I'm like, I didn't even think you could go to Mexico on vacation. I said, man, isn't most of that like do not travel and do not come if you're from the United States? And he said, oh, no, that's only part of the country. And so I was looking. I did a little bit of research into it, and it's like, yeah, there's like six states that are – they classified them as level fours where it's do not go in if you are an American – basically because of the risk of kidnapping or murder or, them grabbing you. And, but the rest of the country is either a two or a three. It's like, well, that's not very far from a level four. From you look at how you look at the difference, and it's like, okay, so okay, honey, we're gonna go on vacation. They got a discount rate over here in a level three area that you know, we probably won't get murdered or probably won't get kidnapped. But I don't know. Just to me, it just seems kind of crazy to go down there for a family vacation and with everything that's going on.
What you hear. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, and I just heard, and help me out, Will, because you said it right. Whatever the cartel's name is,
Arguana or the other one.
Yeah, it's one of those. But they just put out a basically, what would you call it? A memo to their members to hunt down. I mean, they're doing active search and destroy on their citizens, and it's not kidnap
$50,000 bounty.
Yeah, they put a bounty on them, and it's not dead or alive; it's dead. You know, they want them gone. So,
$50,000 bounties. Yeah. I'll touch on your what you were saying real quick, Jason. You're right. I mean, there's some states. Tamaulipas comes to mind of like one of those places where the State Department of the United States says, "Yeah, don't go there. Like, you're not going to come back." And what that level four is the State Department saying, if you go there, we're not going to help you. We have no diplomatic relations where we can try to, you know, ransom you back or anything like that. Like, that's a fallen state in Mexico. We're not going to be able to help you if you go there. So that's the first thing I was going to say. The second thing I was going to say is, you know, here too, I hear people, you know, all around me, and everybody, I'm not coming down on anybody's desires as far as where they want to go on vacations or anything, but recently, someone that I know was going on vacation, and they were taking a cruise, and it was going to go to, like, Cancun or Cozumel, I don't remember which part of Mexico, and I had to remind them, you know, because they kept saying, yeah, it's safe. And it's safe only by the virtue of these cartels,
right?
And I love saying this because it's a fact. Look it up. We know it's published here in the United States. Our State Department will tell you all of those resorts, like in Cozumel or Cancun, Mexico, they're owned by the cartels.
Exactly.
Every one of them, and their only reason they're safe is because the cartel says they're safe. Well, I got news for you. Cartels war against each other, and it was, I don't know, 8-10 years ago at one of these places, I think it was in Cancun, one of these resorts, there was an open gun battle at the resort with a bunch of American and European tourists there because one cartel got ticked off at the other cartel. So, I mean, when you stop and think about, like, what my definition of safe is, it's probably a little different than a cartel's definition of safe.
Well, and, you still families that go down there and stay at a resort, and all of them end up dead, or there was college girls that went down there on vacation because it was safe, and it was this, and then all of a sudden they're kidnapped, I mean, it happens on a regular basis, and it's like... You know, it's a flip of the switch. These drug cartels, they do what they want.
Yeah. Safe is historical, not a whim. You know,
it's like, there okay, you go.
it's like safe today, but tomorrow, now that's a different story. You know, I mean, we got a switch here. We just turn it on and off a lot.
Exactly. Well, the phone number to call in this morning is 307-745-5913. That's 307-745-5913. Or you can call 970-224-4203. That's 970-224-4203. Somebody texted me and asked me for the number. So there it is. I don't know. It's just right now it's like I love traveling. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think I really enjoy it. I love seeing the different areas and different cultures and different, you know, I mean, a lot of it is seeing God's creation of, you know, just, you know, the terrains and then I like seeing, you know, old architecture and stuff. And there's a lot of places that I'd like to go, but maybe just not right now. I think that's one of those places that I just assume stay away from. But I was hearing about that with these, you know, these gangs. I mean, them putting this bounty out on U.S. citizens. Is that just in Venezuela, or where is that?
That's the Mexican cartels.
That's the Mexican cartels. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Dang.
I'm sure they're targeting certain areas, but I'm also sure that opportunistically speaking, you know, they probably don't maintain the areas all that closely. So it's not bad time to be American somewhere.
Not only somewhere, Tim, but the big money as far as the bounties are like ICE agents or DHS agents that are being killed on our soil here in America. This isn't like it may. This is the foreign cartels south of us instructing their people that are here in the United States to kill.
Yeah.
Yes, they're soldiers that we've talked about and warned about for years. That their foot soldiers that are on the streets in places like Chicago and Portland and Dallas and Denver and fill in the blanks, that they will pay a bounty for any of these people that they assault or murder.
I heard it was more money too for ICE agents if they're supposed to be an ICE agent.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like $100,000 or something like that?
I think you're exactly right, Tim. I think it's a $100,000 bounty for ICE agents.
Well, that just goes to show how much money they got, too.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
I think this sounds crazy, but I think it's $1 million for Kristi Noem, the DHS head. I think that is what they're saying, $1 million. Yeah, something like that. So I guess to go back to what we were talking about, I have no lost love for a boatload of Venezuelans that get blown up, but why can't we find those guys that are going to take these bounties up? Kill them.
Yeah, exactly.
They're here. I'm okay with that.
Yes. Hopefully there's less of them here than there were a while ago.
Amen to that.
I'm sorry, this whole business of them people being over here, and I'm not sorry. I just, for these bleeding heart people who, the face of the enemy is not what you expect. And that's part of asymmetric warfare. And they, just because they don't wear uniforms or anything, doesn't mean that there's not a lot. And are there some good folks that are illegals over here doing their thing? They've been here for 20 years. Yeah, that's true. But you can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. That's just the way that works.
Yeah.
Let them come back in legally. So, yeah.
I'll say this too, Tim, and I'm speaking for me. I'm not going to speak for you guys, but the hardworking Mexican guy, like I'm with you. I know those people. But at the end of the day, no matter how long they've been here, they're not from here. Their culture is different. Their religion is different. Their customs are different, and they are strangers. This is not a legal system or a social system that was set up for them. And I think that is, in my opinion, just sort of the brass tacks of the situation of no matter how hardworking they are and family oriented they are, which they are. And I will give them the credit for that. I really, truly will. At the end of the day, they are still a stranger to me. They are not my people. And it is imperative that, the ones that are let in here are closely tracked and closely monitored, and they just can't be here illegally the way they are. They have to go back. They do. They have to go back.
Yeah. Well, we see the collusion of our own government with this in the past. One of the things I just read was part of the Trump policies where they eliminate the AFHA loan eligibility for housing to anyone who has a lawful permanent residence. in March of 2025. And since that happened, FHA loans have plummeted. I mean, they're at record lows. And that also has contributed to lowering house prices across the United States because, you know, you have, it's all about competition and everything else. And there's a lot of people there that can't afford a home. And you couldn't get an FHA loan because all these people were on there. I mean, not, we won't go into the fact that the FHA loans are really exactly, you know, good for the economy. But the point is, it has changed the face of that just since March by saying, hey, you guys, you can no longer compete against our people for this benefit, you know, or for this. So that's just one little snapshot of how it's changing things in the country. So
here, you know, we're sitting here talking about these strangers and the ones that have come here. And Tim, you're talking about this program, which is ridiculous on its face, right? Like, how in the world, why is American taxpayer money going to benefit non-citizens in the first place? And I'll give credit where credit's due. Things are changing under this current president. And here's a headline for you. When we were talking about these illegals and the immigrants, this is from the New York Times, and it's Trump considers overhaul of refugee system that would favor white people. And if you read through this article, here's the first couple sentences. The Trump administration is considering a radical overhaul of the U.S. refugee system that would slash the program to its bare bones while giving preference to English speakers, white South Africans, and Europeans. And I look at that and I think, well, those are people who, at least on their face, would share, historically speaking, America's founding principles, right? As far as they're probably going to be Christians, with them being white Europeans, their customs and values would probably be, at least historically, be similar with those of the founding. I look at that and I think, well, that seems responsible to me. I don't know why that would be such a radical view, other than it doesn't fit that bleeding heart liberal narrative, right?
I
rejoice in this news story. I mean, it's a long article, but I just look at it. I think it's fantastic. If you're going to have immigration, here's one. This is here's another little quote that's coming from this. The changes, the proposed changes would put new emphasis on whether applicants would be able to assimilate into the United States. Well, there's something crazy. Why would we want people to assimilate? Directing them to take classes on American history and values and respect the cultural norms of Americans.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That sounds like a good qualification or pre-qualification for someone that you're going to, and maybe somebody who has some work ethic, and like you said, they have the ability to come over here and fit in. I mean, what a shock.
Well, and I like when it talks about Germany, and I think it was J.D. Vance that was talking about those that were part of the AfD over in Germany, and how it put Holocaust trivialized those that trivialize the Holocaust. They don't call them Holocaust deniers. They just say that there's some sort of trivia
part. Trivialized, yeah. Yeah. Holocaust trivia. Did it happen, true or false?
Exactly.
False. Sorry, go ahead.
The other question I have about all that business is, you know, I mean, if you talk about all these men that came back from World War II or World War I and suffered shell shock or suffered all these things, the basic thing is, well, we need to try and help them and shoulder shrug, but worse hell, you know, that stuff happens. I mean, that's just the way it is. But when it comes to that issue, as far as the Holocaust goes, it's like, oh, we need to, yeah, we need to beat that tin pot forever, you know. And it's like, it's not, yeah.
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, you got people that are going to come over here that aren't going to eat your cats and your dogs, that are looking to, you know, get jobs and, you know, be respectable people of society versus people that just want to come steal, kill, and destroy. I mean, it makes sense for a country.
Jason, I don't remember the exact quote, but the interview we did with Simon Roche from Sidelanders in South Africa, that was right when the first group of South African refugees were coming over to the United States. And you or me or one of us asked the question of what his thoughts were on that. And his quote was something like, I don't know where they're going to end up, but wherever they go, they'll make it better.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah. and that's kind of how I look at this, is these are people, whether it be the South Africans or whomever, really, the folks that are coming in. And one of the main emphases, the way I read this, of this policy change with the immigration, is these are folks that are wanting to flee their countries where immigration has overtaken the country, overtaken the culture, overtaken the society. So where brown people have gone into white areas and destroyed it. And I think no matter, I'll just use the South Africans, you know, these are people that want no part of social programs and social welfare systems. They are, you know, at heart, culturally, they're workers. You know, they are the best of the best and the cream of the crop. And when they come here, they're not going to change. That ethos will follow them. And quite frankly, that seems a lot more like the America that I know, the America that I want for my children. So why would we not welcome folks like that into this country? Those are people like us. Those are not strangers.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a group here of them that are working here and have come in, I mean, legally. And
Afrikaners, Tim?
Yes. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many of them are there, but I know the guy that they're working for, and they're amazing. They're at work every day. He loves them. I mean, he hired them, and he said, well, you know, if you got a brother or whatever, like, you know, they're at work every day. They started out, they got a little piece of ground. They looked like they were just about camping there for a while. Now they've got houses in there. They've got their places set up, and it's really changing. It looks beautiful there. And they're not doing the welfare, they're not doing the government assistance thing or anything like that. They're just working their way in and moving right along and doing a great job. So there you go. You know, I mean, that's kind of a
wherever they land, they'll make it better.
Yeah, yeah. That's confirmation of what he was saying, I think. So
yeah, that's. There's something, you know, that harkens back when you think about those South Africans and the board trek and everything they did down there. And we don't have enough time to talk about it, but it is so reminiscent of our pioneers that left the East Coast and moved through the Ohio territories and settled the West. Of they were able to go into a wilderness and with just the, you know, with strong backs and the sweat of their brow on their own two hands, they made this country. And that was our founding stock. And these Afrikaners are certainly our cousins when it comes to that. You know, it's very reminiscent of our founding.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Wholeheartedly.
Yeah. It's pretty sad when we were sitting around on a Saturday morning talking about how some Africans are good Americans, huh? We're going to have to bring some South Africans to make some good Americans.
Yeah, and they have Christian ethics too. That's the other stuff.
Amen to that. Yeah,
I mean, I appreciate that. So, it's just kind of when we see all that, and the other thing I got off that article when I read it was, and I'm not gonna put too much on that, but I got the feeling that whoever was writing that was making a really big bones deal because of preference to English speakers and everything, that they might have been reading you know, reading something into that a little bit too, as far as they always try to make everything so totally racial on that. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be. I'm just saying that I think there was a little bit of, oh, what do you want to call it, frothing there going on too. And it's like, well, guys, we speak English here. We have these ethnicities here. We have these religions, you know, our philosophy, our religious philosophy, the God we serve is Christian. So whether that's a confirmation by these people who wrote this as to the fact that that means they're white, or whether it was actually, I didn't read the actual program paperwork, but, it, you know, there's that, right? So it's kind of like, oh, I don't trust the media as far as trying to stir things up sometimes. So,
right. Well, it really is in the eyes of the beholder, I guess, because if that particular writer was trying to write a piece to make this program sound bad, it was lost on me because I was all for it. There might have been a communist somewhere in Portland who got angry when they read it, but this guy here in Texas thought, sign me up, I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Funny how that works that way sometimes.
it's pretty funny. No, huh? Almost like we're a divided nation, Tim.
Yeah, that's not what we meant. We meant the other way. Too late. Well, and speaking of getting rid of these guys, did you see where, I mean, you know, every time I think how much further can California go out of their mind, they manage to go some more. I mean, right? L.A. County Board's talking about an emergency declaration over immigration aid. They're talking about changing eviction moratoriums and all kinds of stuff like that. So maybe that's, you know, they want to get rid of, basically they're like, well, you can't kick them out even if they don't pay you rent. They'll still owe you rent, but.
You know, I was educated in the public schools. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm trying to figure out in that particular news story, it talks about renters who have been financially impacted by immigration raids.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I wondered about that too. I guess it means if you go to work, they're going to grab you and send you back to wherever you came from.
Right.
Is that,
I don't know. I know, there is really, to me, what it seems like is this is hurting the landlords, because really what I read there is it's not like Los Angeles County is going to pay the rent. They're just going to prevent the landlords from evicting these people.
Yep. Yeah. That's pretty.
And it says, you know, that once the moratorium is expired, those tenants would still owe the rent, the back rent to the landlord. If I was a landlord in Los, I mean, this has got to be terrible, right? I mean, well, you know, think about it. Who's going to pay the taxes to Los Angeles County if you're not collecting rent?
Exactly. Are they going to put a moratorium on those if you've got those people?
Right.
Yeah, taxes and insurance.
Insurance? How about upkeep of the buildings? It's just going to be more dilapidated buildings falling apart in Los Angeles. This is just stupid. I mean, all for the sake of some invaders. Man, talk about an upside down country. And my understanding is it was a 4-1 vote. So there's one. I guarantee you what I'm about to say, and I'm not even trying to be funny. There's one white guy on that county commission.
Yeah,
I haven't looked it up, but I bet you there's one white guy who's the sole Republican who voted and said this is insane.
Who has a brain? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, because I see a lot of running around at these. ICE protests and stuff that don't have brains. I mean, I'm not sure if they're white, but, you know, it makes you wonder. Yeah. And when you look at all this, I mean, that's one county. So is that any different than, say, like what was happening in, or is that adjacent Denver? No, Boulder, whatever, where the cartels are going in and taking over apartments?
Yeah, Aurora. Yeah.
Aurora. Yeah,
or, yeah, just outside of Denver. Yeah, it was basically Denver. Yeah,
it's not really much different than that. I mean, except that in this particular case, instead of it being the cartel, it's just the city government, which evidently is
same thing.
Like, so yeah, same
yeah.
thing.
Well, and in that article that you were talking about, it said that. That the county officials contended that the immigration raids would contribute to the loss of $275 million in gross domestic products in the state of California. And it's like, okay, so what is, I mean, how is that possible? I mean, there's not people that want to work there. Well, I mean,
I'm going to go back to, you're right, Jason. That might be they would have to cut welfare and make people go back to work, and they can't have that because those people are professional voters. And, you know, you want them home and fat and stupid so they can vote for the Democrat Party. But, you know, citing that $275 million impact or whatever, I go back to the landlords. You've just told a huge segment of the population they don't have to pay rent anymore. Isn't that going to hurt the gross domestic product as
well? Yeah, I would think so. Like, a lot.
A lot. So you stop and think about the stupidity in this of it's bad when the federal government enforces immigration law because it may hurt the bottom line financially. But it's okay for Los Angeles County, a government, to come up with this moratorium on rent, which hurts the bottom line financially. It's a no-go. It's a non sequitur, as far as I'm concerned. It's more political theater. It's just stupidity.
You're penalizing the guys that are working hard that have rental properties that are trying to. You know, those are the respectable people of society there that you want to be looking out after and you want to be helping.
Sure.
And those are the people that that are paying, you know, they're ultimately paying for it, you know. And I mean, a lot of those people that, you know, people think that, oh, yeah, well, if they're a landlord, that they're wealthy. No, a lot of these landlords are, you know, they're trying to build some kind of wealth. But, you know, they've got to pay their mortgage. They've got to pay their taxes. They got to pay their insurance. And they pay it every month when they get that rent check, you know. And a lot of times that rent goes, that whatever they get off of that goes directly back into paying that. You know, they're trying to pay it off. It's hurting the entrepreneur that's trying to do that.
Not to mention, think about this, you know, the hypocrites there in Los Angeles County that are passing these knee jerk, feel good, by gosh, we're going to help these immigrants, by having them not pay taxes. How many of the landlords do you think maybe they're not white? Maybe they're brown. Maybe they're a black guy. You know, maybe they're an Indian guy. Maybe they're a legitimate California Spanish guy that inherited some property that were using it as a rental. When you stop and think about it, it's not all white Anglos that are landlords in Los Angeles County. And if this applies across the board, the very thing they're trying to do, and this is, I guess, my point of what I'm trying to say is this is another example of a government saying if you are an illegal foreign-born human being, you have more rights than a natural-born or a U.S. citizen.
Yeah,
right.
The government that is supposed to be protecting the citizens of California, the citizens of Los Angeles County, American citizens, the foreign-born illegal invader has more rights. Kind of like what you were talking about, Tim. These folks have no rights. But this is a government that's illegitimately giving them preference and rights over the good, hardworking, entrepreneurial people of California. That's really what this comes down to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'd be willing to bet you that the $270 or $275 million loss of domestic goods and all that, I would, a couple thoughts occurred to me while we were talking about that. One is of course, people talk about, especially in California, about, well, we need the farm laborers. Well, most of your farm laborers don't live in L.A. I mean, that's a heck of a commute to go to the farm. But and we've got them shutting water down and destroying farmers in California like crazy. Anyways, but aside from that, that $275 million loss of domestic goods is probably welfare payments to the illegals. You know, that's not going to be spent into that local community, you know. So, yeah. So, I mean, wow. Very, because they classify that as income for those people, or as, you know what I mean, city finances and all that. I mean, that's my guess. I haven't looked into that, but I'll bet you it plays into it some way or another, knowing the way they run those numbers and the way they the way they work their optics, you know. So,
sure.
Well, I know we're coming up on the top of the hour here, but we've got, you know. So.
Well, I'm glad you said something there, Tim.
Usually, I don't notice. Yeah, so.
No, I know, and I'm glad you said something. I was reading. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some Chicago ICE agent protests and what's going on over there. There's a lot of stuff that's going on over there. Let's go. We'll take a break here, though. I'm trying to find a song to play. We'll be right back, folks.
Hello?
Well, guess who called me the other day? A TV reporter from down in L.A. He said he heard a song a little while ago on some obscure talk radio show. Then he asked if I was the writer of the music I just mentioned in the lyrics above. But now that I look back at the wisdom I lacked, I probably never should have said too much. And as he pressured me to share with him a word or two, and we carried on our telephonic interview, a wee still voice inside my head was saying, "You're gonna be sorry for every word you just said." Then sure enough, right after he was through, he slandered and defamed me on the evening news. I should have listened instead to the voice inside my head, 'cause here's what it said to me. You don't go casting your pearls before swine, 'cause they're only gonna trample them into the muck and grime. And when they're through, they'll turn on you and burn you every time. So don't go casting your pearls before swine. And when I went off to sing a song in Washington, I was hounded by those dirty dogs at CNN, who said they wanted to do a favor for me by giving me a little free publicity. I should have never let them turn their lying cameras on, 'cause when the cutting and the editing was finally done, they put horns on my head by changing everything I said. They made me sound like the devil's own son. So you don't go casting your pearls before swine, 'cause they're all gonna trample them into the muck and grime. And when they're through, they'll turn on you and smear you every time. So don't go casting your pearls before swine. Now there's ABC, and then there's NBC, and CBS, and CNN, the New York Times, the LA Times, and the Washington Post are just a few of the most porkiest people. NBC called to let me know they were gonna use the music on a TV show. They were gonna use the song I wrote about the wrong that happened up in Ruby Ridge, Idaho. But then they got a threatening letter from the ADL that said, "You use that kind of music, we'll make your life hell." Then they dropped me off the show, and now I think I know why the music doesn't sell that well. So you don't go casting your pearls before swine, 'cause they're only gonna said you don't go casting your pearls to them sanctimonious media boys and girls. You don't go casting your pearls before swine.
And we're back. And yeah, there's I don't know, man. I was watching some of these videos, and boy, these protests out in Chicago have gotten kind of interesting and definitely heated up. Seen the videos of the ICE agents deploying tear gas grenades and using their pepperball paintball guns and all that kind of stuff. And people are protesting quite a bit over out there. I mean, it just it looks like a third world country watching these videos from Chicago.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
It's insanity. Yeah. What is there? There's no reason for it to be. And you watch some of these people throw themselves on the ground and kick and carry on. And I've been watching some of the videos, and it's like, this is so theatrical.
Well, and the thing is like the people that they're protecting are the rapists and the murderers and the drug traffickers and the sex traffickers. And I mean, that sort of stuff. And those are the people that the citizens want to stand up and protect.
Yeah. Yeah. I seen one the other day, and they said, well, when these raids are over, I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent. You know, one of the protesters, he was all upset. And to me, that is like, that just strikes me to my core as far as back these protesters out there, these people that are raising the ruckus, that are trashing these communities. They're not from there. They're being paid. You know, they're bussed in, they're brought in. They destroy the community. They create all kinds of problems, and then they get on the bus and leave and get a paycheck. You know, I mean, I don't know. Political activism to me is a matter of heart and conscience and soul. And they don't have any. I mean, they're just for hire. So yeah, that kind of goes back to that root of all evil thing, like Wilson.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and I've seen that they got the police tear gas too, huh? But the police officers aren't allowed to help in any way. I mean, I even heard that they're talking about arresting ICE agents
Chicago. Because
that ought to work out well for them.
So. I'm gonna make a weird comparison, and I thought about this 30 seconds ago while you guys were talking. And, you know, I can't talk and think at the same time. So I had to make sure my thoughts were together before I said what I was going to say. So going back to the BLM riots in Portland, there was a stand down order with the cops that, you know, they weren't allowed to react and all hell broke loose. That's what's happening in Chicago now. And that's why the National Guard and the feds are moving in, because the mayor of Chicago has flexed his muscle and forced the police department there that they are, you know, it's lawlessness in some places. It's essentially a stand down order. When you go back to October 6th, with what supposedly happened there in the state of Israel with Hamas, and we know now that the Israeli state gave a stand down order to their military to allow this action to take place that morning. It's almost like they want chaos. So they're giving the guys with the guns the orders to do nothing while all hell breaks loose. And it occurred to me literally just a couple minutes ago, it's the usual suspects in this usual playbook. It's just happening here on our soil. It looks different looking people. But it's the same thing. The end result is the same. And, you know, Tim, you talk about it, the Hegelian dialectic all the time, you know, with the synthesis and the antithesis and that sort of thing of this is just that. It is, and it's getting kinetic in Chicago and places like that. I mean, you have groups of people that are encouraging these protesters or whatever, and they're calling them Chicagoans. They're not Chicagoans. Tim is right. They're just being bussed in from other places. We've seen the videos of these guys getting off the buses. We've seen the Ryder trucks and the U-Haul trucks pulling up and unloading. This is a coordinated, logistically sound, what do you want to call it? It's an offensive. It's a military offensive. And it's starting to go more kinetic, where it's not just people holding up signs and hollering out. It's being escalated to a boiling point. And I find this interesting to watch, considering today, and Jason, I don't know if you were going to get into this or not, but I'll mention it. Today is the No Kings Day, right? The
right.
No Kings protest all across the country. And, we're talking about Chicago, so I'll bring this up. We can keep talking about it. But, you know, there is a leftist judge that, you know, they were trying to do what they should do, and they put up these fences around some ICE facilities in Chicago, trying to mitigate what could be a disaster of folks trying to overrun an ICE facility or whatever. And a freaking judge orders them to take it down.
Yeah.
Now you stop and think about this.
Whose side are you on?
Right. You look at law and order, and you have, in my opinion, responsibility in play of, we know this is going to happen on the 18th, so we're going to be responsible. We're going to put up – we know tempers are going to flare and people are going to be upset, so we're going to put up some barricades and some fencing to try to keep people from doing the wrong thing. And a judge says, no, you can't do that. Now, you stop and think about, why would you make that ruling? That is inviting disaster. And that goes back to the Jews in Israel on October the 5th, I guess, saying, stand down. That goes back to the city manager and the mayor of Portland back in whatever that was, 2020, 2021, of telling the cops, stand down. We're not doing this. And now you have a judge saying, take it down. That's not going to be allowed. If that's not an agenda, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I agree. And the truth of the matter is, it's definitely inciting further violence, because that fence isn't there. It is to some degree to protect the ICE agents, but it's also there to protect the rioters, because the escalation of force necessary if they try to kick in the front door is going to be a lot higher than, say, some pepper balls or some of those sort of things out there at the fence. You know what I mean? So
we've said it. I've said it. This is going to get to the point of where you have some National Guardsmen or ICE agent or whomever that's just going to knock somebody in the dust. And they're not going to get up. It's going to be a shot fired. And watch the crazies lose their mind then.
Yeah. And it'll all be somebody else's fault, not theirs.
I'm going to tell you what I think is, you guys, I hate to say, mark my words, you wait and see. It's going to be some little black or brown kid that gets shot, and that is going to be, and if you guys watch, it just makes me sick to my stomach to see it, but they're dragging these kids out to this stuff, and you see these kids along with these just irresponsible adults, and it's nothing new. You pay attention to all the queer parades that they've had over the years. They drag the kids out to those too, and this is just an extension of that. They're just bringing them out for this, and that is what I think. Is you wait and see, one of these little kids are going to get hurt and people are going to lose their mind.
Yeah. But it's okay if they're trafficked by all these predators and everything else. They have no,
right.
Where's all their bleeding heart crying and carrying on about that? And we're not talking about one or two. I mean, we're talking about you know, well, really, we don't know the numbers. You know, there's a, I mean, the amount of children and women that are being trafficked for human trafficking is, the numbers are probably a lot worse than we think they are, because they target people who aren't missed or who aren't reported or who are underreported or whatever. And so it's probably, but that's okay, you know. But yeah, you let something like that happen, it'll be the end of the world. So had his whole life ahead.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how these people have, it's just like these judges and this kind of stuff that are doing these kinds of things. They're not interested in the rule of law or in historical rule of law. This is an example of it. I'll give you an example. You know, if a bartender overserves you and you go out and hurt someone or kill somebody, say in a car accident or through some other drunken situation, that bartender can be held liable for, you know, their problem. They don't have immunity from that. They can go back and be sued or be held financially responsible for that. But we have these people like these judges and these mayors and everything else. They're putting people in harm's way. They're creating, you know, situations where these kinds of things could, would, or will happen. And
yes,
they just have qualified immunity. You know, it's like, huh, well, that didn't work out. Like, yeah, well, what do you know? You know, that's fine. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
No, that was basically, I was at the end of it. I mean,
well, I was just going to say that, and from what I understand, that these fences that this judge made them take down and take away, that was after they put those fences up because they were getting rocks thrown at them, bottles thrown at them, bricks thrown at them, fireworks thrown at them, tear gas grenades thrown at them. They were trespassing. They were slashing tires. They were destroying vehicles. And, you know, they put up some fences to protect from stuff like that. But, you know, if that stuff was happening before and things are escalating and you take down that, I mean, what do you think's going to happen? I mean, it's just insanity. And I think that I agree with you 100%, Will. It's, you know, it's that, you know, mystery Babylon. It's that unseen third hand. It's that, you know, it's those that are behind the curtain that are, you know, pulling the strings. But here's a judge that's just being bold and brazen about it. You know, I mean, he's showing his true covers. And I think that there's a lot of that that is taking place. There's a lot of, there's a separation in these. I think it's the terrors are just sticking their heads up higher and higher exposing them.
I think you're right, Jason. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think it just makes it easier to weed the garden when they, you know, when they're showing themselves for what they are. And I think that's exactly what it is.
Well, we talk about, you know, praying for, you know, discernment and, you know, for the eyes to see and stuff. And I think that it's, you know, that can happen in two ways. But I think that it's, I really think that God's exposing them. And, you know, they can't help themselves. They're creatures of instinct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't need a microscope anymore. Well, it's more like a magnifying lens nowadays as far as being able to see them. It jumps out at you big time, you know, like, wow, that's big. Mm-hmm. But yeah, well, and the other thing is think about the psychological aspect of taking that fence down. If you're as a protester there and you see that, and that judge rules that, that's basically like a green light to move on in and attack. You know, it's like, well, the perimeter's gone. I mean, they took the perimeter down. They must want us to do that. You know, it's an underlying green light to do bad things. So that's my opinion. I mean, when we see that kind of stuff. So
it's like the Capitol Police on J6 opening up the doors.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. They must want us to come in. They're open. Yeah, exactly. So
they're smiling cops opening up the doors for us.
Yeah. So when we're looking at that kind of stuff, you know, there's that aspect of it too. There, the perception of this is okay, and so, and those people, you know, those ICE agents, they have families, they have children, they have all those sort of things too. So I feel for their safety, and there's
one escalation from the left, the communists, the enemy, whatever you want to call them, you know, the taking down of these fences. Jason, you went through the list of, you know, bricks and tear gas and slashing of tires and all that. It's escalating. There's no way to say that it's not. And, you know, I don't know if y'all know who Don Lemon is. He's a black, he's a former CNN reporter, anchor. He's a queer, but he's fairly popular amongst the left, well-spoken black dude and all that. A couple of days ago, I caught this, I guess it was yesterday, this guy who is a known person, a person of some significance to the left, he came out and what he said, this is just reading the Don Lemon calls for black and brown people to arm themselves against ICE.
Yeah.
So a fairly prominent personality on the left is saying, and I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said, get a gun. ICE is knocking on your door and taking away, Tim, this speaks to what you were talking about, and taking you away without due process as a citizen. Go back and read what the Second Amendment says. Perhaps it will knock some sense in the heads of these people. Nobody is legal. It's a misdemeanor. That's the quote. So he's telling people, arm yourself, knock some sense into these people. You have rights as a citizen, which they're not citizens. I mean, just all of this stuff. But what stands out to me is this isn't some crazy, nasty, Antifa communist that no one knows who they are. You know, this is a prominent left guy that was on the TV personality for many, many years, that does a left-leaning podcast now, not mincing words. He's talking about the Second Amendment, and he's talking about arming yourself for when ICE comes to your door. That seems like it's heating up to me.
Definitely. Well, and assuming those people have the rights, that's the part that always gets me. I mean, it's like you don't have, you know, that's like somebody having a right to live in your house. You own it, you pay for it, you put the roof on it, you know, you pay all the bills associated and related to it, and you purchased it or inherited it, but someone else just has a right to live in it. I mean, it's the exact same, you know, metric.
Tim,
I mean, it's like,
That's as crazy as that sounds. Think about that Los Angeles County moratorium on the renters. That's
exactly
what they just said, is that this is a house that belongs to somebody else, but this person has a right to live in it rent-free.
Yep. And they'll still owe you the money. Really? How are you going to get it? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the old saying, whenever you hire a lawyer, the lawyer gets rich and you get broke. I mean, it's like, it's the same. The whole thing is just insanity. I mean, there's no other word for it.
Talking about insanity in California and this fag, Don Lemon, talking about, you know, getting a gun and arming yourself for when ICE comes, and just thinking about all this insanity. You guys hear about Newsom in California and the Glock ban?
Yeah. I did.
What do you make of that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was wondering. I was looking at it, and I tried to find, and I just missed it. Maybe one of you guys saw it, but are they going to ban all the Glocks from, like, police officers and sheriff's departments, and is law enforcement exempt? I mean, that's what I was trying, because I'm like, man, if law enforcement is not exempt on this, and I didn't see any exemptions, then this is going to be really interesting.
Yeah. And I'm waiting for Glock to file on California for, what do you want to call it, like an anti-trade.
Yes.
Basically, they singled out one brand, so that's kind of a, and I guess another humorous, not-so-humorous quote would be Don Lemon's little thing, well, get a gun, as long as it's not a Glock in California. You know, I mean,
there you go.
So it's...
I don't have much hair. I don't have much hair to pull out, but I keep thinking about I don't want to go back to the NRA and all of their bumper stickers and stuff in the past, but it's right. Ban Glocks, ban every one of them. Criminals don't care.
Right.
Yeah.
They're still going to 3D print Glock switches, and they're still going to have Glocks.
Yeah.
This solves nothing other than preventing honest California citizens the ability to arm themselves to gun up with a good, reliable gun. I mean, that's all that it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah,
it does. And the thing is, I don't know if people realize that or not, but you know, they're saying that the reason that it's Glocks is because it's easily to be able to turn it into a machine gun, and they can 3D print or make these little switches to snap into the back that make it full auto, which makes them useless in my opinion.
Yes.
Anybody that's ever tried to shoot a Glock with a 30 round mag at full auto, and it. Yeah, it's
good luck.
it's worthless as far as I'm concerned. That is, worthless to have. It makes a lot of noise, and it'll give you a rush. And it's fun. It's something that by all means, it's fun to do. But you're not going to hit anything, and it's waste of ammo, as far as I'm concerned. But that the switches, it's like, okay, we're gonna outlaw the guns now. Those switches have been outlawed since 1986. I mean, or banned or whatever you want to call it. But that didn't change anything. And it's like, why do you think this is gonna change? Like it's exactly what you said, Will.
I have a great idea.
Yeah.
Why don't we ban 3D printers?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, and you probably heard most of them on here on the radio show over the years, but let's ban cars. They kill way more people than guns do. I mean,
Hey, I got one. Let's ban Venezuelan.
Yeah.
They kill people.
The whole thing is, I mean, and I'm like Jason has said, I'm not a full auto guy. To me, it's kind of a pointless endeavor. But personally, I don't care if yours is full auto or not. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I don't see the problem. I mean, it's like, so you can squeeze the trigger several times and, or you can flip a switch and dump a whole mag for whatever purpose. Who cares? It's the second
thing.
Shall not infringe says shall not infringe. So, I mean, did it matter whether you were carrying a double-edged sword or a single-edged sword, back in the day? No, they were both military weapons, and they both had different jobs or different places. So, you can't have one of the double-edged jobs. That's bad because you can, get it both ways. So it's like the whole thing is the purpose of it is defense and protection of your family and your country. So why would you not want people to have whatever they're comfortable with or whatever they think they need? I think likelihood you'll chain that sure goes down on full auto, like to almost zero, but okay.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, too, is this Don Lemon coming out and, calling for people to arm themselves. I think it's interesting, because we've been calling for our people to arm themselves, and now they're you know calling for their people to arm themselves. So I don't know. It's just to me, it's kind of like you know, it's interesting because I've been talking about that for years and years and years, and talking about you know how it is so important for our people to be armed, and it is. And
it's almost like we're headed to a boiling point.
It does. It really does.
Yeah.
And Don Lemon has joined the ranks of gun salesmen, like Obama.
There you go.
And, all those guys. So.
Well, it was interesting. I sent that the first time I seen that. I'm like, what? They're gonna ban Glocks in the state of California? You know it. It's like, okay, and then you wonder, you know, what happened behind the, you know, behind the scenes? Did somebody not, you know, bow down to Newsom and, you know, what happened there? You don't know if there is something that, you know, if there's other negotiations that just didn't go in somebody's favor or what, you know, that's always into your, it pops into your head. But I was thinking, I did take that article and I sent it to Uncle Bill, and he lives in California, and he said that he had seen it a couple days ago, but he thought it was one of those satire things that, you know, wasn't really real. And then he sent me a bunch of stuff. He did some research on it and sent it back to me, and he's like, I just can't believe this.
That's funny.
Well, and we look at, I mean, California is such a broke place. I mean, you know, as far as just, I really, you almost are speechless at the ignorance that comes out of that place. I mean, you know, it's like they want a guaranteed basic income. They want nobody to have it. They want free medical care for everyone. It's like, well, who's paying for all this stuff? You know, they want cars that don't work. I mean, I thought it was interesting too. Hollywood's in big trouble. Did you see that? I mean, that's California. Let's, you know, as long as we're talking about California, Hollywood productions, for July through September of 2025 have declined by 13.2%. And that's on location productions in the greater Los Angeles area. And every year it has been declining. The local production for LA has. I mean, it's huge. The motion picture employment dropped from 142,000 people in 2022 to 100,000 people by the end of 2024. That's 42,000 jobs gone. And pays are going down and everything else. I mean, it sounds like Hollywood went, you know, woke and went broke. I mean, there you go. You know, which, praise the Lord, you know, I mean, really, what a stinking toilet. But L.A. is, it's almost like, to me, it's like, well, you know, all you got to do is just kind of sit back and fold your hands. They're going to implode. You know, it's like, I mean, they don't need any help. They can do it all by themselves. So.
Yeah, and I want people to know that we got a lot of really good people out there in California too, and we're not talking.
Oh,
I know we talk about California, but I don't want to offend anybody from California that's listening, because there is some good people, and Northern California and Southern California really should be two different states.
Yeah.
Well, I think the people in Northern California would tell you they are two different states.
They would, so, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah, I have a real heart for people that are over there in the midst of that mess. And I realize they have lives and homes and families there. So they can't just, some people just can't drag up stakes, you know, and get the heck out of there. So, probably at some point you'll be there when it's time to clean up the mess that's left, you know, as far as those people that are doing all that. So you might get some benefit out of it.
Well, and let's go. Go ahead, Will.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's go a little bit south of California, back to Tijuana, I guess. Did you hear about the drone strikes on the government building down there?
I did. That's actually, I was going to say something about it. Before we moved out of California, I was going to say something about that. And I won't try to break my arm patting y'all on the back, but isn't it funny that a couple months ago we were talking about Mexican cartels and being in Ukraine with drones and how that would probably be used here? And turns out on the San Diego border, some drone attacks hit a Mexican attorney general's office and blew it to smithereens. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Baja California State Attorney General's office in Tijuana, 1 mile from the border. There's video footage out there, and I mean, I watched the video, and I was impressed.
I was too. It was very, very impressive. I'm like, dang. I never heard. Did they? And I was looking. Did they ever find out who was responsible for that or anything like that?
There's nobody. I did check on it this morning early, and my understanding, there's nobody in custody or anything like that, other than they're saying cartels. Cartels were responsible for it. But I don't think anybody's been taken into.
Not that they would tell us the truth if they did know or if they did their job.
Sure.
I mean, but.
Yeah. The main thing here is, to me at least, is, you know, it's a mile from San Diego. We've already established the fact that cartels, you know, are wanting to pay $100,000 for DHS and ICE agents, $50,000 for, you know, other folks and that sort of thing. I don't want to make any kind of prediction. I don't want to speak this into reality, but we're going to see that here. It's coming.
Yeah. Well, my question is on
the drone.
I think so too.
Was it a military? Was that a military grade drone, or was that, you know, like an improvised device?
I don't think I didn't see any specs on it or anything like that. I don't think we know that.
I don't think we do either. But I think the ones honestly, Tim, from what I've read up on some of these internet sites that I go to, a lot of the drones that are being used in Ukraine, they're not military spec. They're Chinese drones that have been modified to deliver small payloads. And I think that's the type of IED, airborne ID, AIED that we'll probably see. That's what it appears. It looks like it was just a drop from a drone there in Tijuana.
Well, and I did see a blip on the drone thing, and I didn't get a chance to go ahead and fill that out. So that was, it's good to know this. And the other thing I did see also was the fact that I guess there's a bunch of surveillance balloons showing up again. Remember the big balloon thing?
Yeah.
A while back. And they're floating around again in some places, and it was, I don't remember where it was at, but it was over east. Did you guys see anything on that? So
I just heard that the balloons were back and they were spotted. That's all.
Yeah, so.
Chinese spy balloons from 2023. Maybe they've still been up there. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. We don't.
The Chinese are our friends, though. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Right up until they're not. Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly right. Yes, yes.
So, we're seeing. Well, and there's a lot of, what a mess on production and all that business over there with so much threatening and different things going on. It's just the economy's in quite a state right now, and it creates a lot of upheaval. I mean, I think it's interesting that in regards to that, how it hits our economy. I mean, I was just reading, and Friday, that would have been a week ago Friday, I think it was, the cryptocurrency industry was just hit hard. Did you see that? I mean, that was like,
yeah,
the loss was just insane. I mean, it was one of the big losses in 24 hours as far as money went. All cryptocurrencies fell by $800 billion in 24 hours.
That's massive.
It's just mind-boggling. And I've kind of warned people about that a lot over the last few years. It's like, they're like, well, it's stable, it's a good hedge. And I'm like, it's not real, guys. There's no reality to that. It can be manipulated. It can be, hit hard. And when you look at the fact that that's exactly what happened, I mean, there's a lot of people there that were leveraged financially and lost everything. So this business with, it's just another one of those, I don't know where the money all went, but it's gone. So, it's gone. But, it said that the article I was reading was like, basically, this is a 1929 event for cryptocurrencies. That's what it was. So, when you look at that, I not financial advice, but stay away from that stuff. It's phony. It's fake. So, I mean,
at the end of the day, the way I have felt about crypto, I've had some folks over the years try to get me involved in it, is it's kind of how I feel about electronic gold and silver. If I can't hold it, it doesn't exist.
Yep.
And that's a bonus pack of 5.56 exists. 10 ounces of silver exists. 10 acres of land exists. That's something I can look at and pee on and say it's mine. Cryptocurrency isn't that. So I've tried to stay away from that.
Yeah. If you can hold it in your hand and defend it, keep it, then it's real.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
Yeah, we're definitely in those times when. Well, and isn't it interesting that they manipulate this reality all the time? I mean, what's real, what's not real. So, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. They did the same thing. They're talk about strikes against the farmers and stuff in this day and age. I mean, it's going on in huge ways that you don't hear a lot about. I mean, they're trying to wipe our ag guys out. So, and mostly it's economically speaking, I mean, when you get into it, really. So,
yeah, Tim, tell us about some of those farmers that, over there that have corn to sell, and, none of the co-ops are taking any of the contracts, and they're having to sell it. Nobody's buying, but, we were talking about that the other night, and it's like, wow, what is going on with that?
Yeah, traditionally, usually around, end of September into early October. So the farmers would go out and start putting in place contracts for the corn harvest. And they raise a lot of corn, obviously, here. That's why they call us Cornhusker State. But, there's a lot of corn grown here. So they go out and get contracts and, they get their prices agreed on, and now when you start harvesting, you've got a place to haul your corn, and dump it off. They weigh it, they store it in their bins, and they pay for it, and then it gets shipped out. But all of the guys are quite concerned this year because they can't get any contracts in place. They've gone to the co-ops, they've gone to all the different buyers, and they're like, no, we're not running any contracts. Well, what are we supposed to do? We don't know. We've got it's these farmers, a lot of these farms have pretty good sized bin setups on their properties, grain bins. They haven't used them for years. I mean, most of these bins, I would go so far as to say probably 15, 20 years since, they may fill a bin occasionally for something they're going to feed to animals or something, but they don't fill all their bins. And they're out there cleaning bins out, making sure the blowers work and everything else, because they're going to have to try to hold their crop because they have no place for it to go. Then I found out that a lot of these elevators are 40 to 60% full from last year's crop yet. That hasn't even been shipped out. It's been under storage locally here. So there's, that'll leave you with some questions or some thoughts on the markets and on how that works. But it is a, where's that corn going to go? What are they going to do? Talk about a strike. You know, those guys traditionally, by the time harvest comes around, they need money. I mean, they're cash poor. They've been waiting for the crop to grow, come in. So, it's a real issue for them. And most of them don't have enough bin space or enough room to store their whole crop. So, I don't know. My guess is, and it's strictly a guess on my part, but you're probably going to see corn prices go down substantially or drastically. I mean, one of the guys was saying they can't get trains in to haul them out. I don't know what that's all about, on the rail, but anyways, some interesting things. I mean,
interesting.
Yeah. Why have we got, what's up with that? I mean, is that because China's not buying corn, or is that because
that's what I was thinking, Tim, is this, it almost feels kind of international of, you know, there's so much of that goes on with the movement of corn across the world. It seems like somebody would be stepping in wanting to buy that up, right?
Well, you would think so. I mean, I know that subsidies have gone down for ethanol production in this country, so probably maybe they're not buying as much corn for ethanol. Maybe they're but the other thing I would look for that to do is if corn goes down, what choice do you have? You're going to keep it, feed it. So what are you going to feed it to? Cows probably would be
right.
The number one choice. So that's going to drive down that's probably going to drive down, you know, market prices on that, maybe. I mean, that's just a guess on my part, but I'm just trying to look at the puzzle pieces and see, you know, how it all fits. But it is an interesting piece of information there. So to see. And I haven't heard any peep on anything on any of the Chicago Board of Trade or on any of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't, when it comes to commodities and that sort of thing with corn, you know, I work in knowledge of it, but I don't really see any positive in that. Do you, Tim? I don't see what the positive would be in that.
No, the only thing I can see is that really the ag guys are going to take a serious hit. But,
yeah.
You know, this has been a long time. This isn't really even a new play. I mean, it's a bigger play than normal, but it's kind of the same thing. Corn goes down about harvest time. You know, it goes up after harvest, say, in the middle of next summer, the price goes up. And, when corn gets really cheap, cattle prices go down because they feed. So it's not a new series of events, but it's a lot larger swing this time. I mean, like, we're talking huge. So,
yeah.
And I think that it's been a long time coming from the standpoint of our farmers have not diversified like they should have. I mean, you know, so it's become, and I think that's due to government including themselves in that process by price supports and by other things like that. It's just easy to get to get your subsidies for that item. So that's what we raise.
Agricultural welfare.
Yeah. Well, the bankers love it that way. So that's you can get your loans because it's all guaranteed and all the contracts are in place and everything else. And then in the next breath, they're like, well, we don't make enough money. I mean, basically, we're working for wages, you know. So, and real estate prices are high. We've got older farmers aging out and retiring, and younger generations can't get in because of land prices and down payment prices on this land. So we're in trouble here. And my personal opinion is the government can't fix it. That's the first thing everybody wants to jump into. And it's like, you know, insanity's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're, you know, oh, well, let's have the government fix it. It's like, this, we're here because they've been fixing it. You know, it's like, yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, moving on, looking at the clock. Let's go back down to Texas. Illegal abortion ring discovered. Foreigners doing all the procedures. I didn't see that on the mainstream news. Not that I was watching, but...
No. Yeah, Texas is a very, very restrictive state when it comes to any type of abortion, especially medically, to the point of, you know, we've had doctors arrested down here and all sorts of things. And that's, Texas prides itself on having pretty strong laws when it comes to that. Well, it turns out in the Houston area, if y'all had a chance to look over the article, it's really what it is a bunch of Hispanic folks that are performing illegal abortions. They're calling themselves midwives and that sort of thing. I'm sure we've all known midwives in our life, and you know, I've never known a midwife that specializes in abortions personally. Oh. So I don't know what I don't know what you would call that, but yeah, they were calling themselves midwives, and really what they were doing is just performing illegal abortions there in Houston. But like you said, Jason, that's not something you see, you know, in the news cycle of these non-American born, these illegal aliens are doing this on our soil, contrary to state laws. And it's I would go as far as saying if that's happening here, it's happening all over. But yeah, okay. That's but remember, those are the people that make America better, are those kind of people. So yeah,
they have a right to practice their occupation, even if it's misnamed. Yeah, it sounded to me like that was Texas Planned Parenthood closed and they're being defunded, and now we got a bunch of illegal alien foreigners getting arrested for murder. So, Colorado's probably got the same issue over there. I mean, there's a lot of that going on over that way too, but I'm sure it's all over. So, and I don't think, well, I know God has no use for that. It's nothing but the sacrifice of the unborn, you know, I mean, get into it. So
traditionally, I'm going to go along with what you're saying there too, Tim, and I can make this relatively quick. I know we're coming up to the end of the show, but where I grew up, we had a large population of Jamaican and Dominicans, and I know for a fact that there were illegal abortion facilities being ran by Dominicans and island people, Jamaicans and that sort of thing, and that was I wouldn't say rampant, but they were there. They were unlicensed. They were not medical facilities. Several times there were some arrests made with these people and that sort of thing. And I tied that even then to a lot of voodoo, that type of thing, of those people have a predilection of being okay with that type of sacrifice and that type of bloody practice. Well, I would say the same thing about what happened here in Houston, in this area. You got to remember, you know, I say it a lot, these people aren't like us, they're strangers. And when you start thinking about the Catholic faith, and especially in Central America, South America, and Mexico, and that sort of thing, these are people who worship the dead. The Day of the Dead, Dios Muertos, that is a high holiday for the Mexican people. It is a big deal. They have festivals, they have parades, they dress up like right. ghouls and dead people. It is a big thing. And not to mention that the Catholic church within these Hispanic countries, Mexico, all through South America. Santa Mirotos is a patron saint of the of murder, of killing, and this is a saint that is revered and held up in high practice. And the Santeria practices that go along with this is of worshiping this supposed saint and all of that. Well, the Santeria stuff is the letting of blood, and they this is so supposedly Catholics, right? That people want to convince us that are Christians. They regularly sacrifice goats and chickens and all sorts of things and spill the blood and have these sacrifices. So I guess I say all that to say it doesn't surprise me one bit that they would be running an illegal abortion clinic here because they're not our people. They're not like us.
Right.
Yeah. Very well put.
Yep.
Well, we got about 5 minutes left. Let's close out with a prepper tip of the week. And, I will just start. It was, kind of interesting. I think, and it was, yesterday didn't know what we were going to talk about. Last night got a call from a neighbor. Both you guys know Dusty. And he yep. called me and said, "Oh, I'm sutures. You got you know where any of yours are?" and I'm like, "Yeah." And I said, "Who needs it?" Well, I
got
do.
Got himself
it.
Cut, did he?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've been looking for a half an hour for my stuff, and I can't find anything. And he said, I'll be right over. And so he came over and got some stuff. But it was, you know, and I chewed him out a little bit because it's like, hey, buddy, that's kind of one of those things that you want to know where it's at. And you want to make sure that yeah. you have stuff. And I had never used these things. I gave him some of these wound closures. I don't even know. I don't know what the name
like is. Like Steri-Strips?
Yes. Yep. That's what. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd never
what
used one.
Steri-Strips?
Oh, sure. Okay.
And yeah. I'll tell you what, they're fantastic. It was, they're absolutely amazing. It was put that on a wound and they got like two pieces of tape on them. It's like a big Band-Aid with like a ratchet or not a ratchet, like a zip tie in the middle of it that you can put it over a wide open wound and then get it sealed down. And then you pull on these little plastic deals and it pulls the wound together just like a suture would. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, I mean, I've seen them and I've seen pictures of them, but those things are absolutely amazing and fantastic. And I think everybody should have some of them in their first aid kit and know where they're at and know how to get to them. I'm going to order some more of them. Just they're not real. I mean, cheap. Yeah, they're a lot cheaper than going to a doctor's visit or going and getting sewed up. So I think that puts everything in comparison. But I'm going to order some and. Make my children learn how to use them because I was just really impressed and I called him last night and I said, you know, after that's what he used on his wound and called him and I said, well, do I need to put stitches in it? And he's like, no, he's like, those things worked amazing. He's like, it worked great. He's like, I think that everything sealed up, the bleeding stopped. And he's like, it's good. So, you know, in lieu of stitches, it was definitely effective and they work great. And I don't know, what are you guys have any, experience with those? You guys ever use them?
I never have, but I'm going to get some.
There you go. So I'll tell you a 30-second story. I had the stock of a shotgun. I don't remember what shotgun sitting in my lap one evening. And it's been many years ago. My son was a baby, getting a bath down the hallway in the tub. And I had this stock of the shotgun and I was putting a new butt pad on it. So I had taken the old butt pad off and I had a razor knife that I was kind of scraping the spacer off. It was an older.
You are listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network with Pastor Peter J. Peters, made possible by the tithes and offerings of the faithful. If you would like to be one of those who help to get needed truths out to others,